Podcast.com. two of the most often discussed, but seldom understood, crises in modernity are the increasing loss of cultural identities and the destruction of the environment. However many attempts to tackle these problems as separate issues there have been, rarely is it understood how these matters link with one another. In the era of globalism and mass migration, our sense of attachment to any environment has eroded. People move from one part of the world to another with the ease of a financial transaction. Whole populations, valued now as mere units of labor, are uprooted from their traditional homes, where for generations they have lived, and are transplanted, for the most part, to the industrialized and increasingly decrepit West, displacing whatever traditional populations of those Western countries remains. Where the great many now live is merely where the workbench to which they are shackled happens to be. For the few natives of Western countries who manage to get rich enough by working long enough, the tendency has become to move from their smog-filled, overcrowded homelands to foreign countries where the property is going cheap and the conditions are a little more pleasurable. It is no coincidence that at the same time as this, we have begun to eat up the world's resources faster than they can regenerate. We are destroying the delicately balanced ecosystems of the world with little concern or understanding for what we are doing. Our relationship to the earth and our surroundings is now trivial. People no longer possess either any intimate knowledge of the workings of the natural environment or any significant attachment to any lands or place. And so it is not the least bit surprising that we do not any longer respect the natural world or feel anything for its destruction.
Thank you.
the traditional bond people felt to the land through their connection of their heritage made them both aware of their place within the environment and reverent of the land and its life. Knowing that their ancestors and their kin had lived and died within a place for several generations, depended on it, etched their mark onto its landscape, and when they died returned to its soils to feed and enrich the plants and animals there, deepened a person's connection to the world, and conjoined their life and their fate with that of the land. It made clear and tangible how they connected with the world, and put within its correct place their own sense of individual ego. But the progressive values of modernity and the comforts and complacencies of post-industrial society have withered this profound link. The ease and unnaturalness of modern living has distanced man from the hardship of life lived in closeness to the environment, making him less aware of the peculiarities and needs of the natural world, and not least the importance of living sustainably within whatever confines the environment creates. Modern life has removed us from any setting in which our immediate individual concerns are subordinated to anything else. We have moved from a scenario where our lives are the product of its several links with our world, other people, and our past, to one in which we are freed of everything except our own selfish impulses, but are no more satisfied, empowered, or enriched for it. Nationalism and environmentalism are two approaches to the same predicament. The detachment of our lives from any sense of meaningful context. They both attempt to address the imbalance of our lifestyles with the world in which we find ourselves. And as we attempt to recast our worldview into something that transcends the failures of modernity, both have their place as extensions of a singular, holistic view. The issues of ethnic integration, climate change, environmental destruction, and cultural identity over which our politics and philosophy endlessly and helplessly ponder will continue to seem unapproachable enigmas so long as we see them as isolated phenomena which can be remedied either by the marketplace or by granting more rights and liberties. Until we fix the underlying disconnection of our lives from what is most real, these problems will continue to elude us.
Last night as I lay dreaming of pleasant days gone by, Me mind been bent on rambling, to Ireland's I yielded fly. I stand on board a vision and I followed when the will. And I shortly came to anchor at the cross of Spancel Hill. Delighted by the novelty, enchanted by the scene, wherein my early boyhood so often I had been, I thought I heard a murmur, and I think I hear it still. It's the little stream of water that flows down Spancel Hill to amuse a passing fancy I lay down on the ground, where all my school companions they shortly gathered round. When we were home returning, we danced with right good will to Martin Moylan's music at the cross of Spancel Hill. It'd been on the 23rd of June, the day before the fair, when Ireland's sons and daughters in crowns assembled there. The young, the old, the brave, the bold, they came to sport and kill. There were curious combinations at the fair of Spancel Hill. I went to see my neighbours to hear what they might say. The old ones were all dead and gone, the young ones torn and grey. I meant to with the tailor Quigley, he's as bold as ever still. Sure he used to make me breeches when I lived in Spancel Hill. I paid a flying visit to my first and only love. She is white as any lily and gentle as a dove. She threw her arms all round me, saying, Johnny, I love you still. Oh, she's Mac, the ranger's daughter, and the pride of Spancel Hill. Oh, I dreamt I stooped and kissed her, as in the days of yore. She said, Johnny, you're only joking, as many's the time before. The conk crew in the morning, he crew both loud and shrill. And I woke in California, many miles from Spancel Hill.